What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another draft podcast on the Baseball America podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. This is our first post World Series, post 2023 season podcast, Peter. So, how is the lack of baseball, at least at the big league level, treating you so far? Getting into anything else?
It's kind of driving me a little nuts. It's not even nuts, it's just weird because it becomes so kind of ingrained in your routine. But as JJ every so often hops into Slack to remind me, or I guess the group as a collective, there's baseball everywhere. So it's been like checking on the AFL, the Dominican Winter League. So it's not quite Major League Baseball, but there's still baseball if you need your fix. But
yeah,
super into football and very entrenched in Boston College's kind of hot streak here. And there is a path for them to make the ACC championship game. So although it's like a 0.2% chance, there is a path.
That feels more like an indictment on the ACC's football competition than anything to do with Boston College, considering what's gone on for my Heels. But there also is fall college baseball.
Your Heels can help out my Eagles because the path,
has
to win out.
So they have to win out to help you. I'm sorry, Peter, but your hopes are done for if that's what you're relying on. They've been letting me down for years, and you can join the I'm not sure it would be the Tar Heel way in terms of not getting confident in them at all. So I'm sorry for your loss, but fortunately, fall baseball is going on. It might not be the easiest thing for fall college baseball, and I guess there's some fall high school baseball going on as well. There's still some tournaments and some games, and I'm sure on various high school campuses there's workouts and things going on. So baseball really is a year-round event. We're here to talk more draft. I got to see a little bit of fall college video from some of the players we're going to talk through. I know maybe it's not the easiest thing in the world for listeners to see, but that's still happening. Peter, I'm sure you're hearing about some impressive performances from college players around the country. That happens every time this year. But we're kind of getting close to the back of the first round for our little player review series, at least for our current list. Maybe we'll have to just redo this once we update our list. We can go through all the players that weren't in this range beforehand and make sure we're caught up to speed on those. But we got some interesting players to talk through today. It's a heavy college dose again for you, so congrats on that. But let's just jump right into it. The first player we're looking at is Jacob Cozart. He's a catcher at North Carolina State. 6'3", 205 pounds, left-handed hitter, right-handed thrower. Obviously, still we don't have very many left-handed throwing catchers, but he had I guess, respectable freshman season with North Carolina State, and then he really took a big step forward in 2023 when he hit 301, 392, 546, went from 4 home runs to 10 home runs, really improved across the board offensively, and then played this summer with USA Baseball's college national team during their trials. For me, one of the more impressive all-around players at that event. I was kind of stunned he didn't make the final team. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Jacob Cozart? You mentioned the catching class this year is pretty exciting, and he's one of the guys that's going to make it. So what are your thoughts on Cozart?
Yeah, I mean, to start off, the second catcher that we're going to touch on after Malcolm Moore, Cozart, as you said, had a solid freshman year. Outstanding sophomore year, as always, and as we continue to allude to, having a catcher that is a kind of a force at the plate as well is a premium, and Cozart fits the bill. The calling card with him is the defense, but as you mentioned, he had 301, 14 doubles and 10 home runs. I'd say it's above average power, borderline plus. He has the ability to drive the ball in the opposite field gap. The wood bat performance, if you just look at the back of the baseball card, it might be a little underwhelming, but like you said, you caught him at USA and you got him really good. I think when I went on a synergy, I saw in the four games in the inter squads, I think he went 4 for 13 with, I think it was 3 home runs. I know he had 3 home runs during camp, but he went off. I'm kind of with you, and I'm a little surprised he didn't make the final roster, but nonetheless, it was a really strong showing for him for as impactful as he is with the bat. He's an outstanding defender, receives the ball really well, good blocker. It's a plus arm. It's an easy plus arm. strong, accurate throws to all bases with carry through the bag. It's a very appealing overall profile, even though he might be a little bit bigger for a catcher. He's still going to obviously stick at the position. So
yeah. Yeah, he's looking fun.
At the overall pro, it's just going to be tough to pass on that for so long. It's going to be an interesting debate, though, I think, as we get closer to the draft and as the season starts to unfold, because like Malcolm Moore, Caleb Lomavita, Jacob Cozart, like I could see any organization going each of those three ways when looking at who they're going to select in terms of who's going to be the first catcher off the board.
Yeah, Cozart is kind of fun to watch behind the plate because he is a little bit bigger than you'd expect for the position, but I feel like his actions are actually really good behind the plate. He made a couple of really difficult throws on balls that were well out of the zone where he had to reposition his body, throw from some lower angles, and he still made really competitive throws with sub-2-second pop times. I think sometimes he drops the arm slot down a little too much when he doesn't really need to, and that adds a little bit more run on the ball. But he's capable of throwing from a typical slot with good carry and ride to the second base bag. So, like, watching him receive the ball, I thought he was solid. I think there might be some issues with, like, lateral movement and blocking on tougher pitches, but that's really getting nitpicky. I think overall, like, how he looks behind the plate is quite solid. You mentioned him as a defense-first catcher, and it's kind of funny hearing that considering my very brief in-person look with him. It was like, man, the bat was pretty loud too. I do think he has all fields home run power, though I guess most of that has gone to his pull side. In a larger sample with him, one of the things that I picked out that maybe will be a question for him next year and hopefully he can address is just what he's able to do against velocity. He had a 174 pitch sample against 93 plus mile per hour velocity over his 2 years with North Carolina State. It's not the greatest results you'll ever want to see. It was a 600 OPS against that pitch type, but similar miss and similar chase rates against 93 plus as he had just overall. So I wonder if it's just him seeing more of that. That'll be a question that I have for him this spring. Just how does he handle velocity? But yeah, overall, it's just a pretty quality package. And I think he's definitely got a chance to go inside the first round, depending on the numbers he's putting up this year.
Yeah, agreed. And the barrel awareness skills, even for the, I'd say, question marks, perhaps, surrounding, you know, how he handles velocity, the barrel awareness is there. I'd say the bat-to-ball skills are absolutely above average. I think his in-zone contact rate against fastballs in 2023 was 90%. Overall was 88%. There's not a ton of bat speed and not a ton of hand speed in the swing, but again, the physicality he has and the feel for the barrel and just the overall feel to hit, you know, it allows him to impact the baseball. So an intriguing profile, especially for a catcher. So I'm kind of curious to see, you know, how he does this year and how high he could potentially play himself, because I know this fall he's performed really well to no one's surprise. So they could have another first round catcher down there in Raleigh.
Yeah. All right. Let's unless you have any other comments on Cozart, we can move on to our next player, who is another up the middle premium position college player, has become a personal favorite of mine just watching him play. That's Anthony Silva, a shortstop at Texas Christian University. He is a draft-eligible sophomore in his 2023 season. He hit really well. It was a 330, 416, 471 line. Just 7 home runs, 11 doubles. Didn't strike out a ton, a 12.5% strikeout rate, 8.7% walk rate. And I think, like Cozart, Silva has a reputation as a defense-first prospect and player overall, which I would say is pretty impressive, just given those offensive numbers. I might be a little more skeptical of what he is offensively at the next level. If you're expecting like a 330, 40% plus OBP type in pro ball, I feel like that might be a little bit aggressive, but he certainly can pick it at shortstop. He's got great actions at the position. He moves well. He has reliable hands. He's just a really fun defender to watch. Again, he's another player that I saw with USA Baseball this summer. The bat didn't look quite as good as the line at TCU might suggest for me, and so I'm a little bit skeptical of what he's actually going to be as a hitter. But that's Anthony Silva. What do you have on him, Peter?
I was going to say, for as good as you got Cozart at USA and looking at what Silva did, because it was really his only wood bat sample outside of like a brief stint with Santa Barbara. It was kind of the anti Jacob Grossart, so to speak. But I'm a big fan of Silva in looking through this class, and especially at the top on true shortstops. I think that's a glaring area in which it's a little thin. So I think for my money's worth, Silva might be the top true shortstop in the class, at least right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would even be in competition for him. I don't really have an obvious name, so I think that's a pretty good call there.
Like, there are guys who can play shortstop without a doubt, but like when looking at the overall profile and what they bring of people who are going to stick at shortstop, he might be the best. I mean, Owen Pano's right there too, but for sure at the college level, it's Silva right now.
I think Griff O'Farrell is like a steady Eddie shortstop who does a lot of things well, but in terms of like the tougher plays, I think Silva is a much flashier defender in that sense. I think his tools for the position are better. So yeah, I would still put him above O'Farrell.
I agree. But nonetheless, like you said, it was an excellent freshman year, exploded onto the scene, held down the shortstop position from the get-go for TCU, freshman All-American. Great body at 6'2", 200. I think as he fills out a little bit more and just ages, he'll hopefully add some physicality and some impact. I think the power right now is average or maybe even a tick below. And then I'm with you on the, I guess my eyebrows are raised maybe on the hit tool and the future of it. It's, I mean, he's got plus bat to ball skills. Again, similar to Cozart, it's an 88% end zone contact rate, 89% against fastballs, but I think he really struggles a little bit at times in picking up spin. And his pitch recognition skills as a whole right now are a little less polished than I think you'd want them to be. Mm-hmm. But in 2023 against fastballs at 92 plus slash 360, 418, 460. So that's encouraging. Like, he's not going to miss a heater and he's fine with velo. I just think the approach and pitch recognition skills are going to need to take a step forward to maximize that profile. But going on to his calling card, it's the defense. Legit plus defender at shortstop. He's going to stick there. Really good actions, good instincts, good game clock. The athleticism really shines. He's kind of long-limbed. He almost, you know, glides like a gazelle to the baseball. He's comfortable going up the middle, comfortable going to the backhand side, throwing on the run for multiple arm angles. All of the boxes that you kind of want to check with a professional shortstop, he's got them. And it's in having the privilege of watching him in Omaha, it's a slow heartbeat type guy. He's kind of has a knack for making a big play in a key moment. The one play that is like forever seared in my brain is that play that he made in the first game of the entire College World Series against Oral Roberts, literally in the fourth inning. I remember it because it was a 0-0 game. Not a ton had happened. Ground ball up the middle. Silva goes down into a slide, pops up, throws all in one motion. If you look it up, it's somewhere out there, but it was a play where everyone watching was like, holy bleep. Like, that was probably the best play he made all season. I'm a fan of him. He's got a chance, I think, if he can shore up the approach a little bit and refine the pitch recognition skills to play his way, I don't want to stick a cap on where he could go. But like, it's a top 20 overall, maybe top, gosh, but yeah, top 20 overall potential with him.
Yeah, no, he's an absolute joy to watch play the field and play the position. The highlight plays that he can make are exceptional. I'm intrigued just to see what scouts think of him offensively next spring and how he adjusts as a hitter. You mentioned his ability to hit velocity. His numbers are actually surprisingly good against 93 plus mile per hour velocity. One thing I did notice, and I don't know if this is just getting a little bit too nitpicky, is almost all of his batted balls against that elite velocity, it's opposite field. I wonder if it's a case of him just not being able to turn on those heaters, if he's just late consistently. Like, I would like to see him turn on velocity a little bit more. Again, it's nitpicking because his production against that pitch type and that velocity is quite good. You bring up a good point against secondaries. Almost all of his swing and miss is coming against breaking balls and off-speed pitches. His overall production against fastballs was around a 950 OPS against just fastballs. That steadily went down when you're looking at the secondaries against breaking balls. It was an 817 OPS against off-speed pitches. It was a 794 OPS with 30% plus miss rates on all those pitches compared to just a 13% miss rate on fastballs. So, yeah, shoring up some of the offensive profile concerns, taking better hacks against secondaries, like you said, recognizing secondaries more consistently will be really important for him to just shore up some of the profile. He also hits balls on the ground a lot. I don't necessarily think he's a guy that needs to try and elevate consistently. He probably is just going to run into a lot of fly ball outs in that. If he does that, like, I don't think he has massive raw power. He probably wants to be the sort of line drive gap hitter at his best. But yeah, the fact that he is a locked in defender at shortstop, really strong at that position, will obviously lower the offensive threshold he needs to clear. But in terms of how high he can push up the board on draft day, I think you're going to want to be convicted that he's got a chance at least to be a top or middle of the lineup hitter. And I do wonder, like, what is the offensive upside that he'll have moving forward?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, again, in looking at just the raw numbers in the back of the baseball card, so to speak, it is really impressive. But I'm with you in that I like the one little area that I'm intrigued about is the hit tool. And you bring up a good point about being able to turn on fastballs and flash that. I think if he's able to, again, add some physicality, or just, you know, as he matures physically, if he can add some bat speed, because I think that would really go a long way. I think right now it's average. It's certainly not below average, but it's not crazy bat speed. So I think, you know, if he was able to
bat training, maybe
in the offseason. Sorry, go ahead.
I said get some weighted bat training in there. Maybe that'll help him out.
But no, yeah, it's an exciting overall profile with Silva.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to another college player we have here. Left-handed pitcher Jonathan Santucci, a Duke prospect. I think one of the more interesting arms in this class. He did not get to pitch a ton last year, just 7 games. The season was cut short because of an injury. If you look at his overall numbers, I don't know how excited you might get. This is a guy who's never posted an ERA below 4.17, which was the mark he had as a freshman in 2022 when he had 20 games, 7 of those coming in a starting capacity. But when you look at the body, when you look at the 3-pitch mix, the delivery, how he does it, I feel like this is a guy who could easily take a step forward. I don't have as many reliever questions with Santucci as maybe some of the other pitchers that we've already talked about. And potentially I'm being optimistic there. Peter, maybe you can correct me here if you think there is some reliever risk, but he misses a lot of bats with the fastball. In his outings last year, he averaged just over 93 miles per hour. He got a 30% miss rate on that fastball, which is a really impressive number for that pitch type. He also got a lot of misses on both his slider and his changeup. This fall, it seems like the slider has been an absolute weapon for him. With both of his secondaries, it's a 50% plus miss rate on that pitch in 2023. Again, it's just 7 games, but I think with pitchers, it's a little bit easier to have stronger takeaways from a smaller sample. But it's a solid delivery. It's pretty well balanced. It's a fairly clean arm action. He's strong. There's a lot to like here for me. And I'm curious if you think this is a guy who, whether it's just more games under his belt, more starts, just more time out on the mound, he can move up, or if you think there are any questions in his profile that maybe I haven't highlighted so far. He's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that I'm underratedly pretty high on, just again, looking up and down the board, especially up to those ahead of him. I'm not like totally convicted on really anyone. Maybe Chase Burns, maybe Hagen Smith, but like in terms of slam dunk starters, again, it's a thin draft class on him. And I think that's where Santucci, with a full healthy season, obviously assuming a high level of performance, can set himself apart. As you mentioned last year, season got cut short at 4.3 ERA, but he struck out 50 across 29 innings. There's a track record there, pitching well in the Cape after his true freshman year, also got an invite to USA. If he didn't get hurt, he was well on his way again to earning an invite to Team USA and pitching on the Cape. But again, he's 6'2". He's put on a lot of good weight. He's added a ton of physicality since being at Duke, having access to that level of, I guess, a performance center has shown. Attacks from a high three-quarter slot. I like the arm path and the arm stroke. It's pretty clean, as you said. Repeats the delivery really well. There's not a lot I would, at least right now, tinker with. Fastball's 92 to 95. Will touch a six. And this fall is allegedly been up to 97, and it's got a ton of carry out of the hand. It's at its best, and I think it generates the most swing and miss when it's located in the top half of the zone. I'd give it a six right now. Again, he's a lefty throwing 93 to 95, up to 96, 97 with riding life, and it gets a ton of swing and miss. I think last year it had a 30% miss rate. I'm going to put a,
yeah,
I'll put a six on that. And then, as you alluded to, the secondaries, especially the slider, is really, really good in 2023. Had a 51% miss rate. It's his go-to out pitch. It's got a ton of teeth. Tight two-plane break. Sometimes it'll flash vertical depth against right-handed hitters, and then it'll get some more horizontal sweeping action against left-handed hitters. This fall, it's been just hellacious. I think I saw per synergy in the pitches that it has logged, it is a 71% miss rate or something like that.
And I think that's more pitches this fall for him than it was in the spring. So it's a sizable sample, or at least a comparable sample.
I know it's funny you mentioned that, because I saw, like, when it loaded in, I was like, oh, I must've hit like his spring season or whatever, cause it was 300 something pitches, but nonetheless,
okay, not quite as much, but a decent sample. Yeah,
exactly. But nonetheless, an encouraging sign he's been able to get out there this fall and show off his stuff and stay healthy. And then, as you, to kind of put a bow on it, he's also got a mid to high 80s changeup that had a 59% miss rate, late drop and tumbling action. He throws it with conviction. I mean, you're looking at right now, if you're like, there's an argument to be made right now that you're looking at a durable left-handed starter with three or better plus pitches, with three plus or better pitches, and who's going to start at the next level. That's a overall package when you combine that with Santucci's intangibles, that kind of Northeast tough. I'm a Northeast guy and a Massachusetts guy, so my bias might be showing, but Northeast tough. He pitches with a chip on his shoulder. He's not scared of anyone. That's someone I know personally I'm pretty high on. So I think, you know, depending on how you look at him, there's a chance for him to pitch his way into the top half of the first round. I think showing that he can handle a full workload as a weekend starter and stay healthy is going to be key. But I have faith in him to do that, and I have faith in him to perform. So in my mind, he's got a top 15 type ceiling.
Yeah,
and he's could be one of the first arms off the board. I don't think he's going to go ahead of Brecht or Burns, but he's a sleeper to be that next one up there, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all. I really think the pitching in this class is absolutely wide open. A lot of it's just going to depend on how these guys perform next spring. But there's just a ton of like, and I think we're maybe getting into the range, and especially with Santucci's injury and the fact that he just hasn't pitched that much. It's probably a case of, like, the obvious warts. We just haven't seen him enough to make them obvious. And so you're kind of like dreaming on the guy who you've seen these flashes of, but maybe hasn't pitched as often as a Brecht or a Burns or one of these other pitchers we talked about, where you can kind of pick them apart a little bit more. But I remember going down to Wake Forest, actually, I believe it was Duke, last spring to see Rhett Lauder. He faced off against Santucci on a Friday night. And I was a bit bummed at the time, because I think I actually got Rhett Lauder's worst appearance of the year in person. He gave up 8 hits, walked 2, which is shocking for Lauder to walk 2 in 5 innings. But Santucci was opposing him, and I think he outpitched him in that game. He struck out 11 batters, walked 4 in 4.1 innings. They gave up the same amount of runs, but it was just 3 hits for Santucci, 8 hits for Rhett Lauder. Duke really, really looked good against Lauder that day. But I remember just being really impressed with Santucci overall. Just the fastball was super lively, exploded out of his hand early, and really missed a ton of bats. I think you brought it up when you were talking about Santucci, just showing that he can be durable over a full spring. One thing that I noticed in that outing is the velo did tick down a little bit. Once that happened, it seemed like he was more confident going to the slider a little bit more often. So if he's able to have some time, add some strength, hold the velocity a little bit deeper into games throughout an extended spring. I really think there's a lot to like here. You mentioned the changeup. He hasn't used it a ton, but as a left-handed pitcher, he's using it more frequently than most of the righties who have a pretty loud fastball breaking ball combination. It was 8% of the time. I think he's shown solid feel for the pitch. It has really good life. It does miss a lot of bats. So yeah, I'm very high on Santucci. He's probably the arm I'm most excited to see next year, just because he's one of the top players that we have ranked who we just haven't seen a lot over a full season in a starting capacity. So very excited to see him. I imagine I'll be getting down to Duke and just the Triangle area when those ACC clubs are kind of facing off to see him. He should be a lot of fun. And I think he's a name that probably a lot of people are going to be more familiar with very quickly next spring.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that the louder Santucci story from last year, excuse me, it's like a verbal meme, like tired Rhett Lauder day, wired Santucci day. So I'm happy that you got a good Santucci look out of it. And I went back to look, like looking at the stat line, I think it was 4 earned and 4 1/3, but he was through 3 shutout, I think 3 1/3 shutout, and then Adam Cesari ambushed him for a 2-run bomb, and then Kurtz in the 5th got him for an RBI single. But
yeah, the control backed up a little bit, the velo backed up a little bit in his kind of final frame or two, and then just didn't start pitching off the fastball as much confidence as he did early. But man, the first 3 innings were electric.
I was gonna say, nonetheless, I remember watching that game live and being really blown away with him in the first trip and a half through the order.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's all I had on Santucci. Very exciting arm. Maybe a little bit of an antidote to all of our pessimism for all the other arms. And again, I think as we get further down the board, it's just a little bit harder to nitpick the players. You tend to talk about what the players can do well rather than just hammering on what they don't do well, since everyone knows that that Nick Kurtz is pretty good. Maybe it's a little easier for us mentally to focus on the positives as we get further down the board. But we got another player with plenty of positives to talk about at 24. That's Cameron Smith. Cam Smith, third baseman at Florida State, had a pretty phenomenal showing in the Cape Cod League. Again, another draft eligible sophomore in his 2023 season with FSU. He hit 258, 326, 517, 12 home runs, 5 triples, 8 doubles. Struck out maybe a little bit more than you want to see, 28.7%. It was a 9.1% walk rate. But Smith is tooled up. He's physical. He's got big arm strength. He's got big raw power. And it seemed like he did a lot of nice things in terms of his offensive approach in the Cape. This seems like a guy that has pretty high variance in terms of his outcomes, just given the profile. But it wouldn't shock me if Cameron Smith came out and had a really strong year and was a top 15, top 10 pick, given the tool set. Peter, where are you at on Cam Smith?
Yeah, I became a big fan of his over the summer. It had a productive true freshman campaign. I know coming in, he was one of the more highly regarded freshmen in his class to make it to campus. And the fall performance was really, really loud. I know that and remember that he was one of, if not FSU's, best hitter in the fall of 2022. And so my expectations were really high for him, probably unfairly high for him going into last year. And he flashed that production at times. It was just an up and down and consistent year, normal for any freshman. Ended up with a respectable year. It hit almost 260 with 25 extra base hits, including 12 home runs. Saw some of the swing and miss concerns rear their ugly head. Strikeout numbers were a little high. And so I was curious what he was going to look like in the Cape, because I mean, you know this, and most of the listeners probably know this. The Cape isn't somewhere you go if you want to improve your offensive numbers. That's typically, at least just when looking at, the box score type numbers, that's kind of where they go to die. You can expect a drop off in production, a drop in average, really a drop in everything across the board, just in using wood bats and the pitching talent you're going to face. But it was legitimately the exact opposite for Smith. If it wasn't for Travis Bezzana, I think that he probably would have won the MVP. He hit 347, led the league with 12 doubles, laced 4 triples, and also hit 6 home runs, which it's a very, very impressive offensive output for a true freshman on the Cape. Super physical kid at 6'3", 220, looks the part. Like, you see him getting off the bus and you're like, okay, Like this kid, you know, he's literally built different. Like he looks like a big leaguer. I was most impressed just in his overall like improved approach and ability to adjust to quality pitching. Just comparing the spring season to the summer on the Cape, the overall contact rate improved from 71% to 81%. And then his in zone contact rate improved from 84% to 89%. And on the Cape, he had a 95% in zone contact rate against fastballs. I just remember watching him on many occasion. You know, he would get to hitters elevated, you get to them everywhere. And these were 93 to 95, 96. And it's a simple setup in the box. He simplified it this summer working with hitting coach Tino Martinez. Very simple setup, minimal load, lets his hands and natural strength do most of the work, which I think he found out this summer that he can do that. Just again, given his physicality, there's a lot of bat speed, takes a direct path to contact. And then his two strike approach is a mature one. He widens his base, goes no stride, to maximize the ability to move the baseball. And even then, like he's still able to really impact the ball when it finds the barrel. I remember in the All-Star game watching him, got a two strike count. Went to the no stride approach, wide base, and he got a fastball up. I might be remembering the pitch type wrong, but he laced it off the center field fence in Harwich for I think a two run double. Or maybe he didn't hit off the fence for a two-run double, but he hit a fly ball deep to center field that got caught maybe 3 feet in front of the warning track, and it was hit almost on the line. And I was like, whoa, you know, the impact really is for real. And it's plus power to all fields, as you said. And the hit tool I saw, even though at FSU it might have been average or a tick below, I saw an above-average hit tool. And then he defends well over at third base. He's underratedly pretty nimble. There's range in either direction, plus arm. He's going to stick at third professionally. I don't see a move really to first base. And then the makeup is excellent. Just in getting to talk to him and how he goes about his game and listening to interviews, he's a really high character kid, which is a nice cherry on top of an already impressive profile. And like you said, I think if he can continue to build off of that summer he had on the Cape and have, you know, a borderline be in the discussion at least for ACC Player of the Year, I think again it's top half of the first round type ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, you seem quite high on him, Peter. I'm maybe a little more pessimistic about just the overall offensive approach. I'm curious if you think there was an improvement in his swing decisions and aggression, because even with FSU, it wasn't a terrible overall miss rate, especially against fastballs. He makes a lot of contact on fastballs. That was true of 93 plus fastball velocity as well. I just wonder, like, is he expanding the zone too frequently? His chase rate overall was 37%, which is quite a bit higher than you'd want to see. Against heaters, that was even higher, 93 plus mile per hour fastball velocity. I should say it was a 41% chase rate. His production against secondaries and off speed offerings were good, but the miss rates are a little bit higher against those pitches. And even though there's not a ton of moving parts in the swing, which I generally think is a positive trait for a hitter, I also wonder about just his rhythm in the box. He's almost stiff at times offensively. There's no timing mechanism really, as far as I can tell. It's kind of just a straight stride in his swing with very little hand movement in his load. Like you said, it's direct to the ball at times, but I do wonder just if he has enough rhythm in the box. I thought it was nice to see that two strike adjustment that he made mechanically. That seems encouraging for a player like that. But in terms of the approach, swing decisions, how aggressive he is when pulling the trigger, do you think that is going to hold him back, or do you think that's another area where he improved this summer?
So just in looking at the sheer numbers, he improved also in chase rate across the board. It wasn't as drastic an improvement as the overall contact rate, but he expanded the zone less. I think that, again, the pitch recognition skills took a step forward, especially against secondaries. And there were still times to get outside the strike zone and expand it. But I thought, again, there was improvement from the spring. And I think the key is going to be just to continue to build off of it and not regress into kind of where he was last spring, which led to those high strikeout numbers, held him back a little bit in terms of production. If he can continue to, I guess, work off of the developments he made, it's going to go a really long way. And in the box, like, it's funny you mentioned that, because it's not the most aesthetically pleasing operation. Like, it is, I wouldn't say funny looking. It's just like, it's just interesting. And like, he's able to make it work and made it work against high level pitching. I think if he can continue to, you know, shore up and polish that approach, it's going to go a long way.
Yeah, definitely seems to be more approach questions that I'll have for him moving forward. Like, even if I'm not in love with how he does it in the box, there are not really a lot of bad habits that you need to fix there mechanically. It's a very simple, almost like rudimentary swing. The power obviously plays to all fields, like you mentioned. I think next spring, if he can maybe strike out a little bit less, walk a little bit more, get that average closer to 300 against ACC competition, the home runs will follow. The overall numbers will look quite a bit better. And then you're sitting there looking at an impactful third baseman who certainly has the tools to stick in the hot corner as well. We haven't talked about him a lot defensively. He definitely has above average or plus arm strength for the position. And it seems like he can do enough defensively to stick there. Any final comments on Smith's supplemental tools or defensive profile before we move on to our sole high school player of the list?
Yeah, I hinted on it, hinted at it, but I liked the defense. I liked what I saw this summer. Like, he's sneaky, kind of nimble, and moves well for someone of his size. And I put a 6 on the arm. I think it's a plus arm, and he's going to be able to stick at the hot corner professionally, which is another positive check in his profile.
Absolutely. All right. That's Cam Smith. So let's move on to our one high school player of the podcast today. That is Texas catcher Cade Arambide. Very physical catcher, entered the summer with a really strong reputation as a defender at the position, just massive tools behind the plate, led by maybe a double plus arm. It's kind of crazy how frequently he's getting pop times in the 1.8 second range. He's even popped in the 1.7 second range, which is pretty remarkable. You don't really see that too often. He shocked me with how much raw power he had, just given that defensive reputation that I entered the summer, at least thinking about him with. He was one of the best performers for me personally throughout this summer at the area code games. I think you could make a case that he was the best player at that event. It was either him or Caleb Bonimer. In my mind, he uses the opposite field both in batting practice and in game for power, which is also pretty rare for a high school hitter. I think you might have some questions about bat speed. Is he hitting to the opposite field with intent, or is he just late on pitches? There is some miss in his game offensively that's going to raise questions. He maybe is a little aggressive at times at the plate, but overall it was a pretty solid approach, especially when you're considering that he has a chance to be an above average defender at catcher. I imagine there will be some split opinions on him as a receiver. I know Ben and even Josh, when he got to see him this summer, had really strong thoughts on what he does behind the plate. There were a few events where maybe it's just a case where he's kind of tired, getting a little bit worn down, or it's just one of these showcase games where it's a new pitcher every inning and you're not really on the same page, where he looked a little bit further off mark on his just receiving ability. But I've seen him good in that facet of his game, and I think it's an easy carrying tool with his arm strength to help him kind of lock down the run game. So I'm very excited about Cade Arambide. I feel like in the last few years I've been a little higher on high school catchers than maybe the industry or other people in the BA office. I don't know, it's just these high-risk demographics, I'm very much drawn to them, and high school catcher is certainly one of the riskiest demographics in the draft, but I think he's got exciting upside that someone is going to take a shot on getting like a powerful right-handed hitter with some tools defensively as well. I'm really curious how the industry views him compared to a Blake Mitchell, who was an underslot top 10 pick this past year to the Royals. There are some differences there. Mitchell is a left-handed hitter. Aaron Bede is a right-handed hitter. But I do think Aaron Bede is further along defensively than Mitchell was at the same time. So I'm really curious how the industry is going to line him up in this class.
I mean, just in digging in on him a little bit in the past couple of days, and then I was obviously familiar with him after his summer performance. I think he won area code MVP or offense, whatever they call it, like offensive MVP. He won like performer of the week, we'll call it. But again, I'm really impressed with him behind the plate, especially the throwing arm. If that's not double plus, or at least if some of these throws aren't double plus, then I'm not really sure what is. Like, it's a quick transfer. I thought he moved his feet pretty well. It's absolute BBs down to second base. I mean, it's a strong six comfortably for me on the arm. The offensive profile, I mean, would you say that the power grades out as plus? I mean, from what I saw, you know, with Wood, and then again, it is a controlled setting and you're using like, I think crazy bats at times, but in the Wood bat round of the PGL American Classic Home Run Derby, like he was putting balls almost into the upper deck. Like, I mean, I think it's plus power.
I think it is plus raw. Like I would be confident putting plus raw on it just because in BP, his ability to hit with authority to the opposite field to straightaway center, like he put a ball in the middle of the batter's eye at area codes. That was pretty impressive. And then the fact that he's already able to get to that power to the opposite field in game as well. Yeah, I think you could, I don't know if you can comfortably put plus raw on a high school player just because it's tough to do, but I would with Aaron Bede just given the power that I've seen of him.
Yeah. And I think he does in just looking at his swing, he does a nice job creating loft and leverage, especially the pull side. The one thing and one eyebrow I had raised towards, or the one part of his game I was kind of a little skeptical of, was maybe the pure hit tool. The miss rates were a little high, expanded the strike zone. But the production for the most part was there, especially at area code. I mean,
I
think he hit like 700 in that event, and doing that is unbelievable. And incredibly, incredibly difficult. So
he went 6 for 9 with 2 home runs, 2 doubles, 2 singles, 2 walks, 1 strikeout. The line was 667, 727, 1556. So it's pretty gaudy line for 5 games.
Video game like, and again, like for those listening, like area code production, it's like basically just as like it's where the offensive numbers kind of go to die. And the fact he's able to do that in like not even really a hitter friendly park at Fowler Park at San Diego is all the more impressive. So he's going to look to build off a really impressive summer. And like you, I mean, like last year with Blake Mitchell going under slot in the top 10, assuming Aaron Bede plays well this spring, which I think he's going to, I'm curious to see, you know, how high someone pulls the trigger on him or is willing to. And again, a little bit like Cozart, he's a big kid. He's pretty big for the position, but you know, and just watching some video, I liked how he moved. Obviously the arm is outstanding, but I'm curious to see how high someone is willing to pull the trigger on him.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's got 2 really loud tools with his arm strength and his raw power. I do think you're right that the biggest question with his profile is going to be just the hit tool. How much contact is he going to make? How's the approach going to fare once he's facing better competition consistently? But as a South Texas kid, I imagine he'll have a chance to face some decent competition. I don't know his league specifically, if that's like quality Texas competition or if he's in an area where it's not great. He's at Tomball High School in Texas. I'll have to check in on that, but he's certainly in an area where he's going to be seen a lot early on. They'll get started as soon as most other places in the country get started on the high school side. And Blake Mitchell had a really strong year a year ago that kind of helped push him into that top 10 range for the Royals. So there'll be every opportunity for Aaron Bede to just kind of reinforce maybe some of the attributes about his offensive game that make him so exciting. But he's super fun to watch for me. Definitely was a personal favorite. It's hard not to become a personal favorite when you have a 70 grade arm and you hit like that at the area code games. And I got to sit back and watch all of those games from him. So this definitely is going to be one where if he comes out early next spring and is struggling, it's going to be hard for me to like to fall back with my personal looks because they were just so good. So I'll have to keep that in mind.
I was going to say, if I saw what you did at area code, he'd be like top 15.
Yeah, so I'll have to bear that in mind as we move forward. But if you want to dream on a player, Aaron Bidey certainly has the tools and the upside to really get excited about. So, that kind of wraps up today. Any final comments on Aaron Bidey or really any of the other players that we talked about today, Peter?
You got me even more juiced up about Aaron Bidey than I was coming in. So a guy that I know, just like so many others, are going to be really, really following closely this spring. And again, looking towards next week, I don't know if I can call it a cheese ball yet, just given where he's slotted and where he's likely to go. But Griff O'Farrell is someone I'm a huge fan of. And I think that Thatcher Hurd is a really interesting arm for obvious reasons. So I'm looking forward to breaking those two guys down. And I think in talking through, like, I think we made this point on the first draft podcast, but in talking through the board and going down it, there's so much room for so many of these players to set themselves apart and play themselves into a really, really high draft choice. And I think that while this class lacks like a Dylan Cruz or a Paul Skeens or, you know, even a Rhett Lowry, that talent up at the top, maybe it's going to be a lot of fun following it. Cause I think there's going to be a lot of movement and I think some surprise guys as the cycle unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the fun of it every year. I think, like we mentioned before, that'll be definitely a fun part of this draft class specifically. What do you have coming up on the site in the near future, Peter? I mean, for listeners, as this podcast comes out, it'll be November 10th. We'll have a full week of National League Top 10s that hit the website. My Braves list is already up. I did a chat yesterday. That was pretty fun, just talking with subscribers about Braves prospects. I know you've also been doing some pro prospect stuff. Your Marlins list should be coming out in the near future if it's not already on the site. But anything outside of top 10s to plug or mention for the listeners, Peter?
Yeah, by the time you're listening to this tomorrow, there will be a freshman spotlight piece out on Gavin Grahovic. He's looked really good this fall down in College Station. And then, as you said, the Marlins top 10 will also be out, and you will have the opportunity to ask me a question about the Marlins if you're so inclined, and I will do my absolute best to answer it. It should be a lot of fun. I know the BA subscribers are super knowledgeable and passionate, especially on the prospect side. So I'm really excited for my first chat to field some really quality questions and try and do my best to talk through the system. But looking further down the road next week, I think the middle of next week, I'm going to put out a top 10 ranking of these incoming freshmen, have enough of a sample size, both from the fall and then obviously writing these guys up, where I think I can formulate a decent enough list, and then I'll keep on rolling with the freshman spotlight pieces and expand the ranking. So a lot of fun stuff down the road, and then prospect handbook, there's no bad time to buy it. So I know just from all the work that everyone's put in, it's going to be legit. Like, there is outstanding reports, all the numbers you could want. I know that it is going to be I'm going to purchase a few just to stuff under all my relatives' Christmas trees. So you should do the same.
Very cool. It'll be even cooler when your byline is on that book that you're sending out, Peter. No, exactly. It was really cool for me the first time that happened, and it keeps getting cooler. One other piece I'll plug that's on the site this week that might be appealing to people who like the draft podcast here. Teddy Cahill put out his top 25 recruiting rankings for the class of 2024. So that's a lot of the players that we've already talked about on this kind of podcast series. But if you want to see just how those recruiting rankings are shaping up on signing day, which was yesterday, that's definitely a piece that you need to check out if you're at all interested in the amateur side or the college game specifically. So I'd point you to that as well. Peter mentioned his mailbag and questions. You guys can also feel free to send us questions for this podcast if you want us to tackle anything, whether that's on players specifically, on the draft as a whole, scouting philosophy, anything like that, we'd be happy to tackle. So if you have any questions that are jumping to mind as you're listening or just in general, feel free to send those to us on Twitter. I'm Carlos A. Collazo. Peter is Peter G. Flaherty. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Middle initial.
Okay. Yeah, Peter G. Flaherty. Hit us up. We'll be happy to take questions if you guys have any. But that about does it for today's episode. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for supporting Baseball America. Thanks for hanging out with us and talking draft. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you next time, everybody. So long.